お聞きの放送は SBS ラジオの日本語放送です。
Listening to SBS Japanese podcast Bilingual Chit Chat, and I'm your host, Yumi Oba. In this series, we speak with people of Japanese heritage and those with a deep connection to Japan about identity, creativity, culture, and life across languages. Our guests share their stories in a language they feel most at home in, making each conversation personal, honest, and uniquely their own. Today's guest is a Tasmania-based J-pop artist, Emi Emi.
はじめまして、エミエミと申します。タスマニアに住んでいます。お父さんは日本人、お母さんはオーストラリア人です。だから、ハーフです。オーストラリアのハーフです。子供の時に日本語を全然喋れないから、このミュージックプロジェクトを始めました。I wanted to study Japanese to improve my language because when I was a small child, I didn't want to speak Japanese living in Australia. So I started my music project called Emi Emi to improve my Japanese language. I'm getting there slowly.
まだまだ上手ではありませんが、頑張っています。
エミエミプロジェクトは、もう初めてどれくらいになりますか？
4年ぐらい。4 years ago, I wrote, first song called NGU, which stands for Never Give Up. And in that song, I wrote about, it's, the whole sentiment is 頑張ります。And when I was young, my dad used phrases like, yeah, 頑張って and,persevere and 周りのことを思っています you know, like, think about people around you who are supporting you and encouraging you to keep going. So I wrote this first song called Never Give Up. And then I wrote a few more songs using lots of like Japanese onomatopoeia, like Moshi Moshi. And this is the new song is called Moshi Moshi. And in that song, lots of words on Japanese onomatopoeia, like Doki Doki.And waku waku, and all of these words have such good rhythmic qualities. So I found using this easy vocabulary, it's easy to write songs because it has such easy rhythm. So yeah, I've written a lot of songs with my partner Charlie, who also lives in Tasmania. Yeah, that's how the project started. It's been good.For trying to encourage myself to speak more Japanese publicly. This is my first time doing any Japanese, for like interview, so very 緊張しています。
You told me before that growing up, you didn't want to speak Japanese in Australia. What were some of the challenges you faced to make you feel that way?
Because my brother,was born, my older brother, who was born in Japan and grew up in Japan for 5 years. And then my mom got pregnant with me and she didn't want to live in Japan anymore. So they all moved back to here. And then I was born. And then growing up, my parents, both parents tried so hard to encourage me to speak Japanese. But, I remember thinking if I don't have to speak Japanese at school,or with my friends, then why do I need to? So I sometimes felt it made me feel really different. I think lots of kids from any foreign background have experiences of people saying, why is your lunchbox so smelly? You know, eating onigiri with a umeboshi inside looks weird. Why are you eating that food? Or, your dad looks different to my dad.So, yeah, when I was young, I felt a bit embarrassed, I think, and also just didn't understand why I should have to. So then as I got older, I felt really sad and, you know, ashamed that I didn't try harder. And so when I went back to Japan, I couldn't speak, you know, with my obasan, my ojisan, And that felt much more sad as I got older. So then I tried to learn some more.
Your father must have been happy to see that change in your mindset.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he was very surprised. But it's funny, you know, because these songs that I've written are so silly. Like this Moshi Moshi one, or the last one I wrote is called Taberō. And Taberō is all about, you know, wanting to eat something delicious. Because when I was growing up, most of the Japanese I spoke was related to food, because I love going back to visit Obasan and Ojisan because they were such good cooks. And so vocabulary-wise, my best vocabulary is related to eating. I wrote this song about wanting to eat something delicious, thinking of Japanese food. And again, you know, musha, 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 musha as a sound has such a great rhythmic and tonal quality. So, yeah, I wrote this song and he just laughed. He thought it was so funny. Of course, you know, he thought I wrote about eating because I eat so much. So, no, but it's been nice. He's come to a few shows, and such a big musical influence for me is listening to all of the music that he used to like Chage Nasuka or Arayumi. So when I started to write this music, I was thinking a lot about those old kind of 70s, 80s, early J-pop sounds and synthesizers and things. So definitely his musical tastes have had a big influence on the music.
How old were you when you start listening or playing music?
I learned piano as a young kid. And again, you know, my parents, they're so wonderful and they tried really hard, you know, 日本語 喋って, piano 練習して, like do your piano practice, do your Japanese practice. It's good for you. It's good for your memory. And I was always like, I don't want to speak Japanese and I don't want to do piano practice. So, you know, they worked really hard, and my parents were very kind to, you know, get me to push forward with playing piano. And so I did classical piano as a child and teenager, and then I started playing keyboard for contemporary bands when I was in uni, which was around the same time I started studying Japanese again at university. So I did a few units in university, and then I went to Yokohama Kanagawa Daigaku. I went there for 3 months, and so I picked up, you know, those things again when I was in university. And then I was really lucky during COVID. There's a museum, there's quite a famous museum in Tasmania called Mona, and they had a Tokyo Punk themed band for 8 months. And they said, oh, you're a Japanese person, you can play the keyboard, you should come and be in the Tokyo Punk band. And then when I did that, I started to sing some Japanese, and I thought, oh, this is really good practice. And minna wa Australia jin dakara, minna zenzen wakaranai, no one understood what I was saying. So it felt safe to sing, because, you know, if I made a mistake, it didn't really matter. So that's how I started to sing in Japanese. And then when that finished, I started this MEME project. Mm.
There's a lot of, like you said, a lot of onomatopoeia in your music. Mm. How has it been received by the audience so far?
Live performance. I play with my partner, Charlie, and we also have two dancers. It's Eri Murori Hill Konishi, who's from Nara, and Lisa Muramatsure, who's from Tokyo. And they both live in Hobart and do professional dancing. And so we perform all together, and it's very supposed to be really fun and high energy and silly. So I think people mostly enjoy listening to something different. And even if, you know, the language doesn't land, there's bits in there or little hooks that people can enjoy to sing along to and just enjoy the fun. So more well received than I thought it would be, given it's in Japanese, you know, in Tasmania.
Mm. Mm. And your most recent single is called Moshi Moshi, like you said earlier. Can you tell me a little bit about this music? How did it come about?
Moshi Moshi. When Charlie and I sat down to write this song, I was thinking about being like a teenager and texting someone or sending instant message to someone, and you know the feeling that you get when you're waiting for someone to reply to your message. And so that's when, you know, I was thinking this waku waku excitement and kind of stress and anticipation of waiting for someone to reply to your message. So that's why this song, it has lots of like kind of texting noises or phone call sounds in it. And Moshi Moshi is so cute, you know, as a, it sounds so cute as a hook. So that's what the song's about. And yeah, it was really, really fun. And I think people will like this one as well, because it has a bit of English and a bit of Japanese. It's a mixture compared to the last two. Yeah.
You know, when we talk about J-pop, we often associate with cities like Tokyo, for example. Mm-hmm. What is it like for you creating J-pop from Tasmania?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Tasmania, like, it has such a great music community. It's, you know, we're very small, but because we're smaller, everyone, you know, knows each other. And so there's lots of cross-genre pollination. So there's one person, you know, making, lots of people making rock music, or lots of people making electronic music, or, you know, punk. So all those different communities often engage with each other quite a lot more. And so I think doing the J-pop thing, people are excited because it's something a bit different, but it also takes lots of influence from lots of different genres from the musicians and artists around me in my community. So it's really nice. People are really supportive, and I get so much help. Like, it's not a single person project. I get lots of help from many people to make it happen. So it's exciting, and kids love it. Kids are always so happy, you know, to come up to the front and smile and dance. And it's really simple stuff. Like in Tabero, there's Yon San Ni Ichi as a countdown, and kids love to sing along. Lots of kids learning Japanese at school, so it's nice.
We live in the AI time, and I guess for people who's in the music industry, you know, from songwriting to visuals and even vocals, as an artist, how do you feel about this rapid technology development? Does it worry you?
It makes me so worried. It makes me especially worried because I think when I first started to learn about AI, it felt like this will become something that we use or that takes over jobs, but not for another 10 years or another 20 years. And then some time passed and I thought, oh, actually, it's going to happen now. It's going to happen in the next year, next 6 months. And already I see, you know, people using AI to create a cover art for an album or something instead of hiring a artist to make it, or to, you know, help with producing a song instead of getting an actual producer to make it. And especially, you know, with big streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music, you know, sometimes you feel like you're putting music onto them and you're worried that that is just going to be taken, and, you know, all the bits are going to be taken out of it and then spat out somewhere else. So it's very nerve-wracking from an artistic perspective, but also just, you know, economically, it's, you know, you don't want to feed the machine with your hard work. So yeah, I find it really scary, but it's also really motivating to keep working hard to increase my musical skill and also my language skill, because, you know, lots of people, you know, they visit Japan or visit anywhere and they can rely on like Google Translate or something to get through. But I just think, you know, it's important to keep working hard to not lose or rely on that technology to do these jobs, because the thinking and the process is what makes it so special. So I worry about it, but I think it's also a good reason just to keep going and keep practicing.
So you started this music project because you want to improve Japanese. How has it been?
You know, my biggest priority, and what would be great, would be if in like, you know, 3 or 4 years time, would be if I could get on this call and have this interview with you again and feel safe and comfortable to have this conversational exchange in Japanese. That's my priority, is the conversational Japanese, which is why I think the music writing and singing is such a good way to practice because I think, okay, this is a song, this is something I want to talk about, or this is something I want to write about. How can I do that? I have to go look it up and then learn the vocabulary and how I would structure it and how the different ways I could structure it to make it make sense in a rhythmic way. So looking at, you know, how many different ways can I say this one thing to make it fit into the structure of this song, you know? So in that way, it's been really good because I think so much of persevering with language is thinking, ah, I really want to say this thing, but I can't say it exactly like that. So I have to think of another way that I can say it using the vocabulary or the sentence structure that I do know. So it's been helpful with that and takes time and probably a bit more confidence. But it, you know, I think if I wasn't doing this project, I would be speaking Japanese so much less because I don't live at home anymore and I don't speak much Japanese otherwise, so it's good.
Do you ever want to perform your songs in Japan?
I think right now, I think maybe doing that would make me as nervous as jumping on this interview and speaking Japanese, you know, fully with you. Like, I think at the moment I feel, you know, scared to do that, but if I can get to the point where that feels achievable, then I would love to do that.
If you had a chance to collaborate with a Japanese artist, who would that be?
My favorite artist is Hoshino Gen. Hoshino Gen songs are so joyful, and he's such a fantastic instrumentalist, you know. He plays guitar so beautifully, plays piano really beautifully, but all of his songs I just think are really lovely and accessible, and I think that's why he has such a big fan base. So, yeah, if I could ever do that, it would be with Hoshino Gen, I think. Yeah.
So, you know, just looking ahead, what's the dream for EmiEmi?
I think, you know, for lots of artists, standard goals like having a booking agent or a manager and then booking bigger shows and bigger festivals or making, you know, 5 albums or something. But because this mostly started as a, you know, language learning and confidence exercise for me, I think, like what I was saying earlier, if I could feel confident to have, you know, a full conversation about the music, or if I could feel confident to play in front of an entirely Japanese audience. I had a little flavor of that last year. We played at Candle Nara Canberra Festival. And that was the most Japanese people that I had ever played to before. So I was really nervous. But I think becoming more comfortable with those things would make me so happy and feel accomplished. And I'm surprised by how many other hafu there are in Tasmania and in Australia. So I've had a few messages from people who have said, oh, it's, you know, hard when you don't want to speak second language as a kid and then you grow up and then you feel all of this regret and shame. So I think actually there's a surprising number of people with a similar experience. So I guess that's been the most valuable. That's been one of the most valuable things for me, is to find and, you know, encourage other people that have a similar experience and to, yeah, make fun music with lots of really brilliant people in my community. So I think I'm just enjoying that process and I don't have very specific goals in mind. I just want to keep making fun songs and, yeah. Releasing them is really hard and takes a lot of work and costs a bit of money, so just trying to keep that pushing and not let it fall over is there. That's how I feel at the moment about it.
Thank you so much, EmiEmi.
No, thank you. 本当にありがとうございました。楽しかった。ありがとう。
This was SBS Japanese Podcast Bilingual Chit Chat. For more from SBS Japanese, head over to sbs.com.au/Japanese.
もっとストーリーをお聞きになりたい方は iTunes や Google Podcast、Spotify などでお楽しみいただけます。